Welcome to the London School of Economics. My name is Ricky Burdett, and I'm director of LSE Cities, which is a research center here at the school. And together with a number of colleagues who are all here, Philip Rother, Tony Travers, Savas Verdes, I run something called the Executive Masters in Cities, otherwise known as EMC. And this event, which is jointly organized with the Hellenic Observatory, which is another research and teaching department of the school and LSE Cities, we're in fact holding this event as part of the Executive Masters teaching session. So it's a great pleasure to be here to have the mayor of Athens, George Kaminis, who's going to be talking about an issue which is of great relevance to European and other cities in the world, which is about grassroots regeneration. But to do that, we not only have our classic London and LSE evening audience, we have at least representatives from, in fact, 22 cities, 22 people from 22 cities who are the members of this executive masters, from Addis Ababa, from Quito, from Shenzhen, from Tirana, which is the closest of the cities to Athens, which is what we're going to be focusing on. Let me just tell you what the format of the evening is before introducing our speaker and the panelists. We will have Mayor Kaminis speak from the platform on a particular issue and program that has been highly successful called Synathena, to do with collective engagement and civic engagement in the city. And before we do that, we will actually show a short video, and I'll come to that in a moment, gives you a sense of what it's actually about. We will be then joined by two colleagues from the school, Mira Gheorghiu, who's a professor of media and communications in the Department of Media and Communications at the LSE, who actually has done some extremely interesting comparative work on some of these issues that we're going to be discussing in different cities across Europe, and by Kevin Featherstone, who is a professor in contemporary Greek studies and professor in European politics. He's also the director of the Hellenic Observatory here at the school. So we, in a way, have different sections of the London School of Economics represented to engage with the mayor on the issues that we're going to be discussing. We will then open the discussion to the floor, to you. Okay, let me just briefly introduce the evening's content. I mean, you could say that Athens, at the moment, probably more than any other European city, has focused the tensions and the opportunities of cities in the early 20th century. But one could say, George, that you've been at it for some time. Not you personally, but the city of Athens has been at it as a city since the 5th, 6th century BC. And in fact, as a planner myself, as an architect, I'm reminded that probably the first ever urbanist in the world was Meton of Athens from the 5th century. So you've had 2,600 years to test your resilience. So I think that's an interesting point. You know, it takes time also to absorb the institutions and the DNA. Some very simple facts just to remind ourselves of what we're talking about. Greece has a population of roughly 10 million, which is just a little bit more, but not much more than London. And of that, nearly a third live in the Athenian metropolitan area. But the city itself, where the electorate for George, is roughly 700,000 people. It's one of Europe's densest cities, together with Barcelona and Paris, way up there at the top. And George is now coming to the end of his second term and will, in fact, be standing down more or less at the end of the month, of this month, to then run as an MEP next month. And some of us have heard this issue of the European elections for other reasons than we would really like to, but that's important. I think one of the things in talking about Athens, and particularly the initiative you're going to be discussing, is just to remind ourselves that the global crisis of 2007-2008 really hit the Greek economy hard. You know, the discussion, the word Grexit, remember that? It's now been overtaken by Brexit. Unfortunately, in ways that we would not be too proud of. But the austerity which was introduced from 2010 on really led to harsh recession. Just some statistics. By 2015, the Greeks had lost 33% of purchasing power and 25% of income. I mean, that's a dramatic loss in terms of what one would be used to in a European context. So it's a city that has faced serious socio-economic crisis, but it's also shown extraordinary amount of resilience, and that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Some of the strengths are well known, but worth, again, reminding ourselves, actually, very high quality of life standards in many ways. It's a city with the sea air, the climate, the quality of some of the housing stock very high, very high levels of education, and history, culture, and everything else very strong. There's a tradition for us of the mixed urban environment, not complete gentrification or segregation that we suffer from elsewhere. But there's been a population loss at some levels, a brain drain, high aging index, an increase in unemployment and homelessness, and some of the other issues that we've also read about, riots, civil unrest, and even violence at some point. We'll touch upon perhaps the issue of migrants, because you've, as a city, had to take two waves in many ways of migrants over the last 20, 30 years. One is post-1989 with the collapse of the Berlin Wall and everything that flowed from that, but also just in recent years. Just in 2014-15, that year was the sixth consecutive year that 1 million refugees had arrived in Athens on their way to other European countries. So those are the sorts of numbers we're talking about that, of course, we have no idea of here in this country. So the notion of actually how to react and respond to the situation has been very much what the mayor has had to deal with. And points like this, fragility of the institutions becomes very significant, and you have to, in a way, work and invent with other methodologies, and particularly harnessing social capital in the city. George and I met only a few months ago, in fact, for the first time in Detroit, where we were at an event with American mayors and other mayors that are talking about many of these issues. And I would think, and I think one of the fundamental differences, there's a city that was completely destroyed in terms of its economic base, but its social capacity completely gone. And I think one of the things that you've been able to harness and bring back onto the table is the strong social capacity through some of the initiatives that we're going to talk about tonight. So we are going to show in a moment this short film. It's the story about how cities can energize existing sort of ecosystems. We're going to show this video of Synathina and explain how it works. And it was actually part of what Athens submitted as a bid to win what was a very important prize last year called the EuroCities Award for Innovation, 2 years ago. It also won previously the Bloomberg Mayor's Challenge Prize. In fact, the film, if I'm right, George, is slightly out of date, so some of the figures are there. In fact, up until now, there have been 410 community groups who've engaged with the program, and 3,502 actions have been created by this group. So we'll just show you the film in a moment and then ask George to join us here at the platform. But before we start, could you welcome George and the other panelists to the other seat?
Over the last few years, Athens has been suffering from a series of problems. Facing big issues with shrinking budgets was a puzzle until we turned to our best asset, our citizens. Synathina bridges the gap between municipality and active citizens in a four-step process by collecting citizens' activities and learning their priorities, connecting the groups with each other and helping them find sponsors and resources, sieving the activities which have a greater impact on the city and activating the city's reflexes so that its services can be improved. Synathina.gr is the place where citizens' groups can meet and act. Groups like Borume that deliver unsold products to people in need, or the Ithaca Laundry, a unit that washes homeless people's clothes, or Katia, an individual who offers free haircuts to poor people and refugees. The response was great. From 2013 until today, 253 groups have created 2,066 actions in the fields of solidarity, culture, urban environment, startup economy, and more. For Athens, innovation is not a luxury, but a necessity for faster, more sustainable solutions and a municipality constantly updated.
Well, thank you for the invitation. And before I start, allow me to thank Ricky, Professor Ricky Burdett, for inviting me to speak today at the London School of Economics. Well, I consider it a great honor to be amongst students and professors of LSE Cities, a center of academic excellence in a topic I have devoted the last 8 years of my life. And I always find it invigorating to be in a purely academic environment, because it allows me to remember my older days as a professor of constitutional law in the University of Athens, and of course my own days as a student. As I have often said, the ascendance of the city as a political actor is one of the most intriguing phenomena in today's world. And I'm glad an institution as prestigious as the LSE shares this view by investing in a program like LSE Cities. Now, I'm here to share with you a story of a city, but also of its citizens, a city that found itself in a dark, insecure present and managed to weave together bonds of trust by relying on the power of networks of devoted citizens and inspired individuals. It's a city that bravely took up the responsibility to keep a fragmented and hurt society together on its feet and filled the void of a faltering state, a city steeped in culture and history that managed to reclaim her place in the world almost against all odds. Facing a perfect storm of depleted public funds, a dysfunctional administration, and a combination of crises that shook our continent to the core. The city, as you probably imagine, is Athens, and I'm her proud mayor. But this story is not only about our city. The obstacles we overcame, and especially the way we chose to address them, could be valuable lessons as we struggle to come to terms with an ever-changing world and the challenges the new reality poses to our way of thinking. So while I'm here to talk to you about our experience in Athens, I sincerely hope that in the discussion that follows and the ensuing questions and answers session, we can make an attempt to draw conclusions that go beyond the scope of a mere case study. And let that be our humble contribution to the greater political debates of our time. When Athens started developing the Synathina platform after winning the Bloomberg Philanthropies Mayor's Challenge Prize back in 2013, the basic idea was to document, strengthen, and support the vibrant civil society that was emerging as a response to the social crisis that hit Greece. We realized that an overwhelming number of citizens were working together to improve their neighborhoods and support communities in need. We could feel society was yearning to help and was looking for ways to channel this frustration in a creative way. But there was no clear way for city government to engage with their activities, often overlapping or complementing our own social services. At the heart of Synathina is a platform that allows members of the community to engage in problem solving and reform. Individual citizens and groups submit activities as well as ideas on how to improve their city. And by creating Synathina, the citizens groups now have a valuable tool at their disposal to connect with each other, but also with potential partners from the nonprofit, academic, and the private sector in order to maximize the impact of their actions. And through Synathina, they can easily connect with the municipality services that are more useful to achieve their goal. But Sinathina's most important contribution was how it completely revamped our way of thinking in the municipality and changed our approach to problem solving. In Athens, we quickly realized that our potential as a city was larger than that what conventional wisdom allowed at the time. Our only way was to become more extrovert, to become ambitious, to get out of our comfort zone, and to try to do things differently. Some of our most emblematic projects can be directly traced to either the Sinathina platform itself or to the methodology used by Sinathina, expanded in various other fields of municipal activity. In more than 30 of its recent projects, Athens has adopted inclusive methods by allowing citizens and stakeholders to participate in various ways, ranging from just sharing their ideas to co-designing solutions and even owning results. I will try to give you some examples. A neglected neighborhood, Kypseli, was engaged in an extensive public consultation to decide the best use for an old market building, now turned into a model social entrepreneurship center. The Athens Partnership, which is a philanthropic incubator for innovative public-private partnerships, becomes our way to leverage the goodwill of private companies, foundations, even private citizens, to benefit our city. This is how we encourage partnerships across different sectors with the city of Athens in order to benefit our citizens. Another example, a strategic plan to revitalize Athens' urban forest and central landmark of Lycabettus Hill that came to life through unprecedented engagement with local universities and the collaborative problem-solving method engaging citizens and international experts. 24 of our schools became lively community hubs through the Open Schools Project, reigniting social life in whole neighborhoods. We have created the Athens Coordination Center for Migrants and Refugees. It's an umbrella network that provides physical and virtual space for 92 different organizations working for refugees in Athens. With the Curing the Limbo Project, refugees are connected to active community groups in neighborhoods to regain their self-belief and sense of purpose by serving the city. Thus, they accelerate their integration in society and they are addressing their lack of housing and job skills. In our Athens Digital Lab, young developers sit with city officials to digitize outdated municipal services and test their ideas in real conditions. A historic building was turned into a digital learning center where digital skills are considered a public asset and offered freely to disadvantaged groups, mostly to old people who live alone in their apartments. Emblematic areas of the city, lingering until recently between despair and abandonment, gain a second chance and become hubs of innovation and urban design through concrete proposals by citizens' groups. In a city renowned around the world for its culture, all relevant stakeholders are for the first time in Athens history brought around the same table and under the same roof to design and offer a unique and comprehensive cultural product for the city. It's the Athens Culture Net. Finally, Athens has tried to capture the wisdom of the world by participating in active cities networks like Eurocities, C40, or the 100 Resilient Cities, getting expertise and knowledge in areas we were lagging behind. In this framework, we organized an extensive public consultation with more than 800 stakeholders in the city to come up with a comprehensive resilience strategy in 2017 for up to 2030 for the city. Now, how does all this work touch upon the current global debate about cynicism and the erosion of trust to policies and public institutions? It's an interesting question. And what does the Athens experience tell us? Well, I think it is impossible to create trust in the system if we don't trust our citizens first. And our methodology has tried to do exactly this. Create trust in government to public employees themselves. SynAthena was designed to work with the administration and not bypass it in the more possible way. This way motivated city public servants that are energized by this cooperation and their sense of purpose renewed. It creates trust in government from the side of the private sector and civil society. In Athens now, many people from the private sector and many groups from the civil society, they see a credible partner in the municipality. Instead of being discouraged, they choose to cooperate with us. And that's a paradigm shift for Greece. It creates trust in government from the side of citizens. When first engaged, citizens naturally start off being very cynical. As time goes by, they witness firsthand that the projects that affect them are indeed realized and are working. This creates a sense of ownership to the citizens that feel they have a stake in what is happening in their neighborhoods. What links all these three elements is clear. It's very clear. It's trust, the element of trust. And it is exactly by building trust in these three distinct layers that we manage to create a real sense of belonging for its inhabitants at a time when this feeling was starting to fade. It was these conditions that allowed Athens to embrace its untapped capacity, and by doing so, it energized marginalized communities and won back disillusioned citizens. This way, everyone has a stake and a personal investment in what happens in his city. This is how you leave no one behind, and this is our very own social innovation, let's call it that way, this kind of social innovation that won the European Capital of Innovation Award just recently. To legitimize our policies, citizens need to be consulted. They need to feel a part of what is happening in their city, even if it's a very big city. And ultimately, they need to be empowered to not only design the solutions to their problems, but also implement them in their neighborhoods, in their city. In order to achieve this, they need an administration to trust them with those powers and provide them with the necessary framework and tools to enforce their will. The line of thinking is exactly what we have managed to do in Athens over the past years. Try to engage everyone, believe that solutions can be found everywhere, trust your citizens and give them the framework to work together on the solutions. I said in the beginning that the city is fast becoming one of the most relevant political actors of our time. What makes cities unique as opposed to central government, what is it? It's the capacity of cities to deliver and the capacity to connect. I have reached this conclusion through our experience in Athens. I firmly believe that this type of systemic change could not but happen in a city, and city, why? Because it's a laboratory of progress and innovation. Today, that happens in cities. I consider them as genuine laboratories. And it is therefore incredibly pertinent to be able to have this discussion here with you today. Thank you.
So, as you know, we are going to open up discussion to the two panelists, but George, can I ask you two quick things. You didn't mention money.
Yes.
Right? And I think many of the things that you've talked about in the normal way of thinking of things, and you made the point that you had to invent something else, one would imagine that the city authorities, anyway, was contributing funds to a number of these initiatives that allowed them to happen. Can you just say something about that in the context of an economic recession, diminishing tax income, etc.?
Yes.
Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Okay. First of all, we had to make our own economies. Eh? We had to cut down expenses. It was difficult, but it was not impossible, because before that, the municipality was spending a lot. That is why my country has bankrupt. So we made economies. On the second hand, we worked very hard to bring European structural funds in the city. And we managed quite well. The third thing is that building trust, you attract donations from people, from big philanthropic institutions, like the Stavros Niarchos Foundation, for example, like the Ionassis Foundation, the Latsis Foundation. In Greece, we have many people that are very, very rich, as elsewhere. They create their foundations, but because of this tradition, you know, of the public administration, bureaucracy, incapacity, or even corruption, they are very difficult people to convince them to offer you their money. So you have to build trust, and we managed to do this. Now, it may seem a little bit funny or ironic, but our problem from the second or third year when I took office in 2011, was not having money, but spending money. Yes, because of the public procurement procedures. It's very important in cities, you find it everywhere, that the public procurement procedures are very complex. They make life difficult many times to mayors, but in Greece especially. And because of the economic crisis, and because of the several controls from the central government that were added, public procurement has become one of our major problems. I say it often, we have money, but it's very difficult to spend it.
Kevin, you had a short point, and then I'll turn to Mira.
It was simply that, of course, George's time as mayor is noted for a very significant reduction of the budget deficit. This is quite a striking turnaround in terms of city funding. And I appreciate the point about philanthropic donations, philanthropic foundations, but presumably that's giving a different image to the public, not necessarily what the mayor can do, but what the mayor can do with others, only in collaboration. Presumably it has some impact on attitudes towards government locally.
Can I go further into that?
Yeah.
So, I spoke about Athens Partnership as, let's say, an incubator where you have public-private partnerships. What happens is that because of the extreme bureaucracy, because when you receive direct money from a donator, and it enters into the city's budget, it can be lost there. It can be lost.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot do your job. I know, I mean, quickly, efficiently, bypassing the bureaucracy. So we created a partnership where the donator offered the money to this entity, the Athens Partnership. The Athens Partnership ran the project and did. It's the Athens Partnership that donated the project to the city. So the city, the only thing that they had to do was to accept the donation. So that was a way to bypass things, because we managed to do things in a few months, let's say. Otherwise, we would need years to do those things.
Yeah, that's an interesting sort of context that we may want to go back to. But perhaps I can ask Miria to offer her thoughts. There was a lot said by you, George, about marginalized communities and how they have grown over the years for reasons that have been talked about, because of the internal dynamics of the economics and also external flow of people. And I know Miria has been also working on that aspect.
Yeah. Thank you. I would like to thank also LSC Cities, especially Ricky, for inviting me to be here and talking to you and being part of this panel. I think this is a very exciting opportunity to reflect on issues that involve citizens as well as public authorities in the context of cities. So I've been asked to give a brief response to the mayor's speech. So I would like to address the mayor's insightful and thought-provoking talk, and to respond partly as an academic who does research on citizen communications, partly as a diasporic Athenian, but most importantly, I think in the context of this discussion, I would like to speak and to draw from research that I have been recently conducting in the city of Athens. And I have been in Athens alongside colleagues examining if the city is actually a city of refuge, and if so, in what ways is it constituted as such? This research has been part of a bigger project which examines, in the context of Europe's migration crisis, how those receiving and those arriving in cities, in three European cities, manage change in their lives and in the city themselves. And Athens was one of the three cities where we landed to do our research, alongside Berlin and London. So in this brief response, I would like to briefly identify two snapshots from this fieldwork, as this illustrates, I think, what the mayor identified already as the many expressions of active citizenship in the city of Athens. And I refer to the concept of active citizenship as a kind of citizenship that finds different expressions in the city, which recognizes citizens' agency by integrating participatory practices and different voices in the conduct of public life, a kind of citizenship which, as enacted and performed, makes a difference to individuals' lives, to communities' life and conduct, and to the city itself. And when we went to Athens, we recorded how citizenship is enacted in that city, but also in other European cities. And there is something about the case of Athens that makes it particularly interesting. And I would like to mention here that Athens is not an exception. It's not an exceptional case, but it is an exemplary case of to see, to study, and understand how citizenship is enacted under very difficult circumstances, with what consequences and with what potentials. I want to briefly mention two occasions of active citizenship we observed at the underbelly of the city, where the state is almost completely absent. So moving a level down from the level that the mayor spoke to look at the underbelly of the city, where life is actually lived in the city of Athens. So, for example, we were very impressed with the mobile library that reaches out those who have very little, those new and established Athenians that occupy houses, but also the streets of the inner city. The project of the mobile library offers to such marginalized residents access to books, but also invaluable internet connectivity. And internet is indeed invaluable in this case. This is not an exaggeration, especially for newcomers, refugees, and migrants who need to get access to information and processes that are only available online and upon which their future rights depend. We were also humbled by the everyday practices of solidarity among teachers in a multicultural school of the inner city, where in a school where the majority of students are migrant. These teachers, beyond their contractual requirements, spend time playing with children outside school hours and share their meal time with them. What this, among many other similar occasions, revealed to us is precisely what a city of refuge looks like, where citizens engage in incredible acts of hospitality, advancing cultures of solidarity and conviviality. What we also observed is the development of an astonishing set of skills among people who can now mediate with the law, with the city authorities, with landlords, with children's services, with UNHCR, and the list goes on and on. And sometimes they even manage to get things done, simply because nobody else will. And this is the last point I want to make as I conclude. We met citizens that do their best, citizens that do actually make a difference to the city, to other citizens, and to non-citizens living in Athens. But among them, repeatedly, we also met people who are burnt out, who struggle to cope with practical and psychological demands that are much bigger than what they can themselves manage. The ones we met are the citizens who keep going on, and they do make change, big or small, every day. But these people, like the city itself, and as we heard already, feel the pain of years of austerity and urban deprivation. And as they reflected in their action when they spoke to us, many set forward an important question. How much can citizens actually do in a city of multiple crises, in a city where so many people have so little? This is a question they ask themselves again and again, and they asked us as well. And as much as they didn't know the answer to that question, neither do we. Thank you.
George, I'd like you to, in a way, respond now to Mary's point, because we're going to change scale, I think, in a moment when we come to Kevin. And, you know, the first question is, what you hear from Mary is something which surprises you? I doubt it. You must be quite pleased. Also, Mary, if we'd have the Mayor of London here and you told them what you found there, he wouldn't be so pleased, right? I think is where that research is going. But we're not going to talk about that. But George.
So, well, in a certain way, I am surprised, but I don't support the opposite view. Even though we have this Center of Coordination for Migration and Refugees in a central building in Athens, where you have 92 organizations working there, and we know quite well what's going on in the city, we really don't have knowledge of what's going beneath and about the feelings of the people. We have made a study, have conducted a study, a survey of the opinions of refugees. Well, those people that live in Athens now are, many of them, they arrived in 2015, early 2016. They arrived massively when the refugee crisis broke out. We had 1 million people passing through Athens towards the north border. Many of them went to other countries, Germany, Sweden, etc. But some around 60,000 people were stranded in Greece and around more than 20,000 people stranded in Athens. These are people that live in a refugee camp that we created and some others around Athens, many of them in apartments that we manage together with the NGOs and under the auspices of and the help and the organization of UNHCR. And many others in squatter buildings run by activists. And we really don't have a very clear idea what's going on in there. Anyway, what we try to do is, first of all, in the apartment project, try to disperse people, not to create ghettos. It's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, how do you do that?
Well, it's very difficult. We didn't succeed as we wanted to. Why? Because of the prices. You know, you are obliged to go not to the rich neighborhoods in order to find apartments. And now, with the Airbnb, when suddenly in 3 years, only in 2 or 3 years, you have the prices of apartments, renting or buying an apartment, rising up in an unprecedented way, it's become still very difficult. Now, internationally, the international experience, and please, we can confirm that, is that you find race and xenophobia mainly in places where you don't have refugees and migrants living. That's confirmed everywhere. You know, it's more the stereotype and the fantasies that create those kind of fears. In neighborhoods where they live, things are more or less normal. So now, we had the Golden Dawn problem in Greece, the most violent, extreme right group, political party, was formed in Greece, in Athens. They had a percentage of 15%, 16% almost in the municipal elections of 2014. It's a very high level. So now we are waiting to see. In less than 2 months, we will have the local elections and see what's going on. For the time being, things seem quite quiet. But why? Because we have a big trial taking place now, with many of them accused of creating and participating in a criminal organization. So we don't have a clear idea of what's going on with them right now. But we will see in 2 months.
Mira, just going back to your point on the fact that you, in a way, you scratched below the surface that you, as a mayor, wouldn't normally go to. You said you don't have that evidence. Did you feel, in the responses you were getting, that there was an acknowledgement that the city itself, the city as an administration, was doing anything to, in a way, encourage this attitude? Or is that a deep-set Athenian ethical approach? I mean, can you unpack that a little bit in terms of what you found on the ground, or okay. Both of you?
Yes. Well,
I want you to. It's no, you go ahead.
Okay.
I want Mira to.
Okay. Yeah. You know, Greece, we are very sentimental people. But you can be sentimental in a positive way and then in a negative way. I mean that when migrants started arriving massively in the islands, and mainly families, Syrians, with their children, etc., people were motivated to receive them well. Right. In Athens, because we took care of organizing things, the whole thing has gone in a smooth way. I think that what you have discovered, I cannot disagree with that. But in the islands, where they are stranded, in Lesbos, in Moria, where it is very difficult situation, I think that Golden Dawn is going to rise. Why? Because they have not managed to manage the situation with the refugees there. And you have touristic islands with a very high percentage of people, refugees living there. So we will see a rise in Golden Dawn in these islands, but maybe not in Athens, as I said before.
Yes, what do people say in the neighborhoods of the city? I think there are many parallel stories, like in every city, mm-hmm. that take place on top of each other and against each other. So I think there are three reasons why we have an active civil society. Organized or in occasions less organized in Athens. The first reason is because Athens has become a diverse city, and like London and other cities that host people from different places, those dynamics of urban conviviality emerge naturally, precisely because people live next to each other. And there is perhaps you called it Athenian ethics. I think it's also the ethics of conviviality and coexistence. Mm-hmm. As the mayor said, when people live closely together, they're more likely to commit to each other. The second element that is very important is activism and the long history of activism in Athens. So you have a civil society that builds on decades of grassroots activism. And importantly, this is an activism that is very contests volunteers because they feel that the politics of solidarity is not the same as the politics of volunteerism. Either we agree or not, this is the position they take. And the third strand of that characterizes the civil society is the coordinated actions. This is where we see also that collaboration and the recognition of what the city does. And I think those three pathways of active citizenship coexist. So the city is present, but perhaps it couldn't be otherwise. It cannot be present everywhere.
On this point, George, do you want to comment?
Yes, the city is present. It must be present because suddenly, in the summer of 2015, where everyone in Athens is, you know, in the islands, in the beaches, having vacations, people start arriving massively and sleeping in parks and public squares. So you have to do something. Mm-hmm. So we created the first refugee camp. It was a difficult thing to do. Why? Because the space where we created it was in a poor neighborhood. And it's the last, you know, neighborhood where you have a lot of free space. So it's there that we create the refugee camp. There we have the first mosque created by the central government. And people start complaining, saying, what's happening here? So you have to offer some incentives so that they, you know, more or less accept the situation. So we put an emphasis there on public works, doing things for the neighborhood. But the rest in the city, you know, in a city that was a little bit deserted, it was a good thing to have people living now in apartments and at the same time having money to spend in the local market, because through the European funds they were offered money, the refugees, so that they could go around and have a living. So there was an incentive also for the neighborhoods. But you have to be very attentive to everything, because if you start having problems, things can change the mentality from one day to another. If you have incidents, let's say, like what happened in the Christmas Eve in Cologne, where you had sex harassment by refugees to women, so mentalities can change easily.
Kevin, let's just move over to you for a moment to open up perhaps some of your reflections on wider issues of where the city sits in terms of also regional aspects and issues of trust.
Excuse me, Kevin, I would like to add something important. Because we conducted the survey with the first refugees, so you find out that they are disappointed that they have to stay in Greece. They didn't want to stay in Greece. They wanted to go to other countries. They didn't want to stay in Greece. Why? Because of the unemployment, because it's a difficult language to learn and speak, and for many of them, because their relatives and friends were already living in other countries. And so you have those people living now in a situation of limbo. They don't work. They do nothing. They live in apartments. Or in refugee camps. So it is a complicated issue. It's not easy to manage such a situation.
Well, thank you. I wonder if I could just take a step back and then raise three questions. I'll try to be relatively brief. First of all, thank you for the invitation and the collaboration. I think this is a fascinating case, a great story in terms of a shift of governance. Let me say something contextual and then raise my three questions, if I may. To put it in context, perhaps for the non-Greeks in the audience, if we compare the pre-crisis period with the crisis period, then what we've seen with George as mayor is a kind of transformation of local governance in a context which was deeply challenging. 3 points for the challenging. Of course, as has been mentioned, the depth of the recession, loss of 25% plus of GDP. But secondly, also in a society pre-crisis, which was well known for the weakness of its civil society, weakness of its civil society, national, local, regional, anywhere, a weak civil society, based on a set of attitudes towards government which were antithetical, which were incivic, which were distrustful, all of those things. And a third contextual point is that in 2011, George came to power essentially as an independent candidate in a political system dominated by political parties, dominated by strong party identities pre-crisis. So in effect, he defeated the centre-right, but in effect with a broad-based pattern of cross-party support as an independent in a political system which doesn't do independence, as it were. So in that sense, the context, it's tremendously important to set the context before the crisis and then the impact in terms of the crisis. So let me try to develop three possible themes, issues for discussion in no particular order. What do we think of when we think of the crisis? We think of the troika, we think of the institutions, we think of the European Commission's task force for Greece. This is important in terms of the intervention of the troika in the internal workings of government. Certainly in national ministries, the troika would go in almost on a weekly basis to ask what had been done, what had been achieved in terms of the objectives. The task force for Greece, the European Commission's agency, had a kind of carrot and stick complementary to the troika. The task force would go in with offering technical assistance to see how could we support, how could the task force support the achievements of certain policy objectives to enhance the quality of administration. So this was a case in which government, certainly national, was under a monitoring the like of which no other European system has experienced. The extent and depth of the auditing, of the monitoring, of the constraint in terms of policy choices has been tremendous. And of course, it hasn't finished entirely. So I think the first theme I wanted to raise was in terms of how that kind of national constraints from the European intervention with the Troika and the task force might have impacted at the city level. Was it significant? Was it irrelevant? To what extent was it a constraint? The second point I wanted to raise was in terms of sustainability. Precisely the innovation that George has brought as mayor of Athens comes with George as mayor of Athens. This spring, there will be the municipal elections in May with a new mayor, with a whole new set of municipal councillors. What then of what may be the legacy, what may be sustained thereafter with a new set of political personnel? There is a question in terms of the interpretation of the role of the mayor, the interpretation of the relationship between the mayor and local citizen action groups, etc. Final point I wanted to raise, and that is on this much bigger theme which we could explore in terms of public trust George rightly raised this in his introduction, and it's been touched upon. First of all, can I quote back what George has said and was, I think, mentioned in the video. First, we trust the citizens. I'm going to repeat that. First, we trust the citizens. In perhaps other international contexts, that sounds kind of apple pie politics. In the context of Greece, however, I think it represents a tremendous cultural innovation. Think in terms of the administrative culture, the bureaucratic culture. George alluded to the difficulties, the lethargy of public procurement procedures, the complexity of public procurement procedures, the rigidities of administrative style throughout public administration in Greece. First, we trust the citizen. I cannot imagine, well, I would have had some kind of psychological trauma, I think, if I had heard a public servant in one of the ministries in Athens say that to me. First, we trust the citizens. The context, public trust, is very difficult, and it comes back to the question of what is George and what is sustainable. I was looking at the European Union's public opinion surveys, Eurobarometer, and in autumn 2018, they had a regular set of questions about who do you trust, asked right across EU member states to citizens. On each of these measures, Greece showed the lowest levels of public trust anywhere in the EU 28. What percentage tended not to trust government? 84%. Tend not to trust public administration? 81%. Not to trust regional and local authorities? 77%.
Except Athens.
Of course, except Athens. But I'm trying to put the context here in terms of, I'm sure many Greeks will make the simple point that there's a long tradition of a lack of public trust. Yes, of course. But I'm making the point that this long tradition today is exceptional in the sense of being the lowest in the entire European Union. And if we're talking in terms of a new style of governance, all of the wonderful local action initiatives that George, as mayor, has supported, a breath of fresh air in terms of changing the relationship and the expectations of citizens towards their local governance. It's still in the context of a highly problematic set of public attitudes in terms of public trust. So that leads us back to the point in terms of sustainability, what comes after George as mayor. I was thinking in terms of what did we know before the crisis in terms of civil society. There were, as George has alluded to, a number of vibrant neighborhood actions. In Athens and other major cities, we had local neighborhood environmental and ecological groups, particularly concerned with recycling issues. I think today, George will correct me, I hope he can correct me, but the city of Athens' record in terms of recycling today is not good. If anything, the recycling rate has gone down from the pre-crisis period. So it rather, in a small example, rather reinforces the point of what shift is being made, which is permanent, and what shifts are simply occurring, which are temporary. In other words, the contrast in terms of, if we look at the system as a whole, what is changing and what has been the impact of the mayor of Athens, is this kind of a bamboo shift, of a change of the bamboo tree, which will simply revert to its norm with another mayor? Or is this something deep-rooted which has somehow been transformative? I think the jury's out on that. I'd be nervous at suggesting it was the latter. Thank you.
George, you can't talk too much about what's going to happen after the end of the month, but I think what Kevin is urging you to, in a way, be open about, and given you're in an intimate room with, you know, just a few friends here, and you're on your way out, you know, it's an important moment to maybe reflect more openly on what are your fears about what happens when you move. I mean, you were telling us before that in the Greek tradition is that when the mayor goes, all his advisors go too. The whole team goes, a bit like the American system, not like the British system where civil servants in a way stay on. So in that context, but going back to the bigger point that Kevin mentioned, could you reflect on that?
Well, now we enter into very uncharted waters. The issue of trust of citizens to public institutions. First of all, we have to admit that it was never high in Greece, never. It was one of the lowest.
Yes.
Okay, now, having such a situation, very high percentages of mistrust of citizens to the government, one could say, how come you don't have an Orban, a politician like that, appearing in the public scene? Because the first thing, you know, the first reason for populism arriving into power is the mistrust of citizens to the government.
You had Panos Kamenos.
What? No, we already, that's what I wanted to say.
Okay.
That we have already had maybe the first country in Europe that had populism arriving into power, and it was proved that even populists can't do the job. It's a big disappointment for many, many people. Because it's there, you can see it. Tsipras and, you know, Kamenos of the extreme right, they formed an alliance. They had promised so many things to people, and, you know, now people are very deeply disappointed. That is why we have the lowest percentage of trust in Greece. And that is maybe why we can be a little bit optimist now for the future. Yes, because if we have a change of government and people see that now a new government can do things better, we will have trust coming back. Can you understand what I want to say?
Yes.
Okay. Now, with Athens, if you ask many people in Athens, they will ignore what we are talking about right now. About civic groups, working together with stakeholders, and things like that. Why? For many reasons. Because we have worked, we shouldn't forget that active groups are mainly people more or less, let's say, of a high level of education, that are interested in participating in public things. So they are those people who are ready to work with you if you prove that you can deliver what they are asking for. The big majority is now people very poor, mainly ignorant, very disappointed, very disoriented people. And people that sometimes they look at the city, because when you look at Athens, you look on a vibrant center. You look in a very lively city, very interesting. But you go to the neighborhoods and people still feel alone and abandoned. Why? because of the unemployment, because if even when people are employed now, they live with those salaries of 300 and 400 euros. We are supporting 40,000 people in the city every month, offering goods and services. When I go to our center there that we have created of support, I really look at people who are really lost with empty, you know, eyes, or people who are very ashamed, they don't look at you. Very marginalized people. And so one could say, oh God, you're supporting 40,000 people in the city, all of them are going to vote for you. No, these are lost people. I don't think they're going to participate in any kind of public vote right now. So what we have done is work with citizens who could be energized. Maybe we have gained some others. But the big, big majority, because of the central political system, is disappointed. And the second thing is that we still are the most centralized state in Europe. You have a municipality with very few powers. So in order to do those things, many times you have to bypass normal procedures. So it's very complicated. And I come to the third answer, with a new administration. The big challenge was to bring what innovation you bring in the city with stakeholders, even big companies. When you create a digital council, you have there Oracle, Google, Amazon participating in a big table and trying to design the strategy of the city together with the universities and the municipality. It's something very important. But you have the classical administration there, the bureaucracy, who cannot understand many things of that. Why? Because of the lack of knowledge, the low level of education and everything. So the big challenge is how to bring this knowledge in the administration, though, so that whatever happens when you have a new mayor that's going to come, and even if he doesn't support her, you have created something that's going to remain there. It has been very, very difficult to do such a thing. So you have something, you have many innovative projects, you have many people that are involved that we have brought in the city. The core of the administration, we have to admit it, has remained unchanged. Why? Because you don't have the means to do it, and because it's a long-term project, and it's a national project, not a municipal project. But if we don't have the classical attitude of a new mayor coming and, you know, from one day to another bringing his own people to do the things, then you will have a disruption in almost everything. If you have someone who can understand what has been done in some innovation fields, then you have a hope that many things will remain.
Is there a candidate in the pool of candidates, anyone who would be able to?
Well, I think that we have the main candidates, two of them. I think that, yes, they are educated people. They are people who have lived abroad, have studied. Modern politicians, well, let's see what prevails in their own personality. I'm speaking about Bakoyans now, Kostas Bakoyans. Now, am I speaking too much?
No, you're going to speak more because there are going to be lots of questions fired at you in a moment from the audience. And Mira, maybe as we respond, it would be interesting to hear your comments on in a way, what's also been said about what you thought maybe at the ground level. We haven't answered your big question about the national and the supranational institutions, but let's park that for the moment because otherwise we won't have time for questions. So can I ask for a show of hands if there are questions from the floor?
Hi, my name is Alex Johnston, and I'm working in Detroit. Thanks for your comments. You mentioned that procurement was a sticking point for Athens, and I wondered what particularly was the problem. Is it a technological problem? Is it policy? Interested to know the answer to that. Thanks.
Pass the microphone. Let's have two questions, and then...
Hello, Mayor Kaminis. Thank you very much. You are directly responsible for my workload being increased, because after our mayor in Tirana, Albania, visited the city of Athens, he came back and said, why is there no sin Athens for Tirana? So I thank you for that, and thank you for being an inspiration, not just in Athens, but also throughout the region. My question is, often these kind of initiatives very quickly sort of morph, because they are technological mostly, and because a lot of the events happening there, at least in our case, often morph into a very small sort of group of people, hipsters or sort of more interesting people in the city, and not they do not address the underbelly, let's say, that Professor Giorgio also mentioned in how do those tools. So have you found any solution about how those tools like Sin Athens can also be sustainable in terms of addressing the underbelly of the city of Athens? Thank you.
So, George, would you respond to both points, please? On public procurement.
Okay. If I have understood well, because I didn't hear very well what you asked, but I think that I have managed to capture the main idea. I start with the procurement. No. The procurement, it's a legally very heavy procedure. Can you understand? It takes a lot of time. And because of the Troika and all the constraints, you have to get the approval of the central state, and the central state is moving even slower than the municipality is moving. So it's a kind of legal procedures that move very slow. What I said, what I proposed, because every time we think of reforming something in Greece, we go and we reform in a big scale. We want to reform public administration, or you want to reform municipal administration, you start a project and it concerns 325 municipalities. And sometimes I think, well, we have tried many reforms. We don't prepare them well, we don't follow up what's going on, we don't evaluate, we don't do those things. So why don't we go with some pilot projects? So create and choose, let's say, three or four cities in the country that perform well and start taking away constraints and bureaucracy procedures and test it and see what happens, and then try to implement it to more and give the incentive to more cities to follow the example, let's say. So we are talking about a country and a city that needs very profound reform. And through some pilot projects, we could do it easily. Now the hipster question. Okay, hipsters are protagonists in some things. Yes, but you can go deeper in the society. When we had this project about the old municipal market, that was a monument for the neighborhood, and it was squattered. So I told them, please, to the squatters, give me the keys. It's a municipal building. I want to transform it to something where you can also participate, because they were, doing things there, shows and singing and creating. They were doing things. I told them, I can connect with you. They didn't do it. I was waiting for the month of August. We entered there. We took it back. We brought European funds to renovate it, and we created a hub. But before creating a hub there of social enterprise, we conducted a survey on the neighborhood, asking them, what do you want us to do now with the municipal market? And we had 400 proposals coming from people living in the neighborhood. So you can, it's not only hipsters, you can involve also citizens there.
Maria?
Yes, a brief comment to that. I think you mentioned the digital initiatives, which I think is an important dimension of innovation. And actually, we did find many digital initiatives which were initially celebrated and which disappeared in thin air. So I think it's also a question about long-term policy and sustainability. What people need in Athens is public, reliable digital infrastructures. And perhaps this also democratizes the space. And another issue that is implied behind behind the hipster question is that of gentrification. And actually, in that same area, Kipseli, that you mentioned before, where the market is located and where we did indeed go for a study, we thought that people in this deprived area would be concerned about migration. Everybody was concerned about gentrification. Nobody was worried about migration.
There are other questions? Okay. One over here.
Thank you, Mayor. My name is Caio from Brazil. I would like to know about the future, your vision for the city in terms of city branding. How do you see Athens competing with other cities in the international scenario, other moving a bit away from a major touristic destination? Thank you.
Well, you have a city there. Well, let's not only see the city of Athens. The city of Athens, I'm the mayor of the central city of Athens with roughly 700,000 inhabitants. We have the whole region of Attica, but we don't have a metropolitan administration. We have 66 municipalities, and I have the same powers that every other mayor in the region of Attica. So, but you have a region there where you have everything. You have very good climate. You have very near the Athens Riviera, only a few kilometers from the center. You have many archaeological sites, wonderful museums. You have a port, one of the biggest ports of the Mediterranean that's nearby, the Piraeus port. So you have delicious food. You have everything. Everything. You don't have snow. The only thing you don't have there is snow. But driving 3 hours, you can go skiing to Athens. So culture is one of our main products for Athens. But now, with the port of Piraeus, with the arrival of the Chinese, the COSCO company, it's the biggest company now that is managing the port of Piraeus. You can transform, you can create a new economy, mainly of logistics and services. And of course, take advantage of tourism and the culture of Athens, and not only the ancient culture. Athens, during the crisis, maybe because of the crisis, has a very vibrant cultural life. Documenta 14 took place in Athens. It was inaugurated in Athens. So culture, tourism, logistics, and services. It's in a certain way now Piraeus has become the door from the Mediterranean to the rest of Europe. So that is a certain vision that we could have of Athens.
Thank you for that. There's one question over there.
Hi there, Savas from LSE Cities. Classical role of cities as regulators, what do you think the role of your municipality is as regulating these types of platforms? You interestingly said that, you know, populists can deliver goods on the ground. How do you see your role as regulating who offers what and how? Or is there a role for, do you want to engage with that?
I didn't understand the question. I'm sorry.
Sin Athena is a platform.
Yes.
Where different organizations can tap into and build their networks. And a lot of these platforms, whether it's civic engagement, are often tapped into by organizations that we might not be very comfortable with. And you mentioned...
Who could be? No.
So it might be Golden Dawn or subgroups of these organizations offering meaningful services. What is your role as a municipality in regulating a platform? Otherwise, it could just be a happy, open platform that anyone can join.
Yes. There is one major criterion. Because Golden Dawn is a racist organization. So it always discriminates between Greeks and non-Greeks. And this is not acceptable. And we had this very important incident in 2013 where Golden Dawn was on the rise. And one day they announced that the next day they were going to distribute food, handouts, only to Greeks in the central square of Athens, the Syntagma Square, Square of the Constitution, that is the name of the square. So when I heard that what they were going to do, I found the ground to prohibit this act taking place in a public square, discriminating in that way, handouts only to Greek citizens. And that is the first time that there was a public act of against public dawn. Yes. It was symbolically and politically very important. So you have a criterion there. And it's themselves, they're racist, they're not acceptable in such a platform because they discriminate.
We're coming up to time, and I was wondering whether Miria and Kevin may have some concluding comments to offer, but perhaps just before we get there, and I've heard the term, George, you've used many times, is the notion of bypassing, that you have to do things by bypassing in a way the system. You know, you have institutions. We spent the morning with the executive master's team hearing what a sophisticated, top-heavy, more or less efficient system of governance there is in this country in terms of delivering all sorts of things, including the Olympic Games, say. Not perfect, but there's a process. You talk so much about we have a system, we've got to work with it, but we've also got to bypass it. Kevin, your question right at the beginning, your first point, was about the effectively national or even international powers in many ways. What did they do to either help, frustrate the delivery of some of the programs that were intended? So perhaps, George, there are moments where you need to even bypass the pressures from above. And Mira, you may have other experiences. What I'm thinking about, George, is when we met and talked about, I think I asked you, what's the biggest issue you have as mayor in your city? You told me in October last year that you felt you didn't have the powers to do about anything about one thing which really upset you. The number of young people sleeping on the streets and who were drug dependent. And that you couldn't, with your powers, do anything about that because that has to do with the health authorities, which are not under your command. So as we come to final reflections, it would be very interesting to hear in many ways, in your case, not Miria and Kevin, what's the one extra power you would like to have when you come back as either mayor or prime minister or whatever you do? What would you give the mayor as an extra power? I mean, for example, the mayor of London does not have any powers over education, you know, directly. No powers over health. That's important issues. So if you just pause for a moment and come back to that at the end. Miria and Kevin.
Just to say, as a social scientist, I it's my job to always identify the challenges and the limitations. So, and what things can be better. But I have to say that when we did this study where we compared Athens with two cities with many, many resources, Berlin and London, we were really humbled to find out what was going on in the city. We expected to find darkness, and this is not what we found, because we found cultures of solidarity again and a public ethos of commitment to citizenship. But of course, even though we were we found a lot of hope in Athens, we couldn't ignore the deep structural inequalities that the city experiences. And I think these deep structural inequalities is something that we always have to remember when we have our hope, but also our vision about how cities can be better.
Kevin?
Thank you. The point about bypassing, I think there are many episodes pre-crisis, during the crisis, and I suspect in the future as well, when effective governance will require bypassing the established rigidities and procedures of government in Greece. You referred to the London Olympics. If we think of the Athens Olympics of 2012, which were highly successful, of course, we can recall the comments of Prime Minister Stamatis at the time, in which, for various legal documents, he was sending round motorcyclists around Athens to try to bypass, circumvent established procedures of approval of various actions. So there's not only George's mayor, there's also previous cases in which the most effective way to get things done is to bypass the deeply embedded procedures and cultural attitudes. And I don't think anyone in this room is going to suggest somehow that public administration, local, national, or regional, has shifted so much in the recent years that this would not continue in the future. I think the there is this important point about EU intervention. I think many non-Greeks simply do not appreciate the depth, the focus, the extent of the intervention of the Troika, of the institutions, and the support of the alternative role of the task force for Greece. So I'd be very interested to hear from George whether this was relevant at the city level. If not, why not? It seemed to be pervasive in all other parts of public administration. And of course, the narrative was of Greece giving up so much of his governance during the period of the three bailouts.
Okay. Yes, I forgot to answer to that question. And it's very interesting. Well, the consequences of the Troika presence and intervention was not felt by us directly. Why? Because we didn't have the powers. Mm. So the Troika went directly to the state. So what happened in Greece, in very few words, you know it much better than I do. So you have a country that has a very huge debt, and it must pay its debt. So you have a new loan coming from the institutions, let's say. So they go to the government and tell them you have to do this and this and this and that reform. So the government, successive governments, instead of doing the reforms, they preferred to impose new taxes, yes, and cut down expenses, but not in the government, in the central government structure that they control, but cut the expenses of the municipalities they didn't care about. So I never met anyone from the Troika, even though I was the mayor of Athens. It was the Ministry of Economics, the economy, who was meeting them and who was taking the decisions. So Troika affected us directly. 40% of the city, you know, funding from the state disappeared, was cut down. But we never met the Troika. But we felt very heavily its intervention in the central state. If we had the power to tax, et cetera, et cetera, we would feel, but we don't have. So I hope this is an answer.
Can I just ask, is the political, yes, scientists are interested in this kind of thing, the task force for Greece, did they intervene? Not.
Yes, only once. Once they intervened, they came, they met us, they took their information, and they never came back again. So
we're going, yes, to have to wind up, so please conclude that, but give us the one extra power.
There's no one extra power. There's no one extra power. If you have the responsibility of a metropolitan area of 3 million people, because I don't speak about the powers, no, I think we shouldn't. It makes no difference for 600,000 center of Athens speak about a metropolitan governance of the whole region of Attica. In reality, you need every power except of, you know, foreign affairs, of conducting the policy with the relations with the European Union, public defense, etc. The rest has to go to the big cities, to the regional authorities, everything.
It's interesting that in Paris there's exactly this debate happening, where the mayor of Paris is only has a representation of 2 million people within a functional
only
area
one
of
sentence,
11 million.
Only one sentence more. You need, things are complicated in cities now. You have big cities. You have every kind of problem. You need holistic approaches. You have the narcotics problem. Eh? People in the streets of Athens, you know, consuming and selling drugs. So imagine, you need police. It's a public health issue. It's a health issue for these guys themselves. You have to take care of them, find them a job, try to integrate them again in society. That's a holistic approach of a complicated problem. So how can I solve this problem if I have to coordinate the ministries, the responsible competent ministries that belong to another government and not to my government?
Well, since you're going to become an MEP in a month's time, you can then lobby from the center, so to speak, to influence change at the national and at the city level.
Well, let's
can you
see
join it. Me in thanking Miriam?